Hey guys, real quick before we jump into this next episode, I want to discuss something with you. I made a decision a couple of years ago not to bombard this podcast with tons of ads or just bombard you with sponsorship. Nothing would drive me more crazy when listening to other podcasts when the first 5 minutes were nothing but ads. So I worked hard not to do that to you. I try to keep the ads to a minimum and keep the podcast as streamlined as possible. So do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Buy yourself a bag. Up your shooting game. You're going to thank me. And if you're not a rifle hunter, go buy yourself a glassing pad. Your butt is going to thank me after spending hours behind the glass. They're awesome. If you use promo code John Stallone, all one word, you'll save 20%. And lastly, please, I know you heard me say it, iTunes, Podbean, go leave us a review. I need the feedback. The ratings help me reach more people, and it helps me keep this free. So do me a favor, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, and go leave us a review. Thank you. Let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to talk a little bit about late season elk hunting, and I have David Barnett with us on the phone, and we are going to pick his brain a little bit, maybe hear a couple stories, and go where it goes. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Like I said, just getting back from an Idaho archery hunt that definitely left a little bit to be desired, but ready to start digging in. I got some late season hunts coming up now, so excited for those.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before I started the recording button here, and Dave and I both had very similar experiences in our early archery elk hunts. Both got rained on the whole time and just had a rough go at it. It happens sometimes, but
yeah, just kind of part of the game sometimes.
Yeah, Oregon's tough to begin with for hunting, period. But it makes it that much worse. And you would think, because it rains there so often, that it wouldn't make that big of a difference. But hunting them the way we were hunting them, it's so thick over there and it's so loud underneath that when it's raining, that if you're not 150 yards from them when you're bugling, they don't hear you. So you got to be like right on top of them to even get a response. And that just cuts your, you know.
Honestly. Oh, yeah. And that's what we ran into in northern Idaho there. You know, it's so thick that, you know, not only does your ear sound not carry very well as far as location bugles, but also, you know, just trying to work in on bulls, they hear you coming from a long ways away. You know, no matter how stealthy you're trying to be or not, there's just so much undergrowth to wade through. And that's what we ran into. A lot of the bulls, you know, they literally hear us walking and they gather up the cows and boogie. You know, so it was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. Sucks. Hopefully your late seasons will be a lot better.
Right.
Yeah. Well, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself and then, we'll jump into some questions.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, my name is Dave Barnett. I grew up, kind of split my time growing up between western Montana and very northern panhandle of Idaho. So I grew up hunting a lot of very, very thick country. Really kind of cut my teeth, so to speak, on archery elk hunting in particular. Growing up when I was 7 or 8 years old, toting around with my dad, you know, chasing elk up in the high country there. Right after high school, I kind of jumped right into the outdoor retail world. I worked for a major retailer for about 10 years. During that time frame, I also managed an archery pro shop. So kind of more of my, I guess, emphasis in my professional career is more based on the archery side of things. Several years here ago, killed a pretty nice bull with my bow, and I was contacted by a guy that works with GoHunt.com that I'd known. And I started doing some writing for them. That went on for about 3 or 4 years. I did a lot of in-depth articles for them, as well as work for their insider platform. And just recently here, about a year ago, I actually accepted a job with them as a research manager. So now I live in southern Utah, primary work I'm doing for GoHunt now is taking care of like new states we may be adding, data integration into the website, as well as like just researching new information to add there.
Sweet. Sounds like it.
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about late season elk, because as soon as the early season elk's over and people start doing some deer hunts, everybody starts thinking about late season elk again. So,
oh yeah,
it'll be here before we know it. And I get the same question every year, and I like to ask different guys about it and how they approach it. But how do you go about locating where you will hunt? And try to be specific, like, you know, give me something like a plan that someone could adapt into their skill set. Somebody can use these and kind of take it, you know, plug and play in any state or.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the first thing, obviously, like you when you start breaking down an elk hunt, you know, and kind of the first step for most guys is going to be checking out maps and Google Earth and that kind of thing. Just initially looking at a unit, there's just so much country to consider, you know, and it can definitely get overwhelming pretty quick. Kind of the thing I like to do when I first start attacking things is really sit down and look at just the basic needs of elk. You know, so for the most part, elk are pretty intolerant to pressure. They don't like being around other hunters. So I like to focus in on areas that are going to be remote. Remote, oftentimes guys are going to consider the backcountry, you know, however you may define backcountry. But also remote could be just specific areas where hunters just don't want to access. I'd say that a lot of my better hunting spots are within a mile or two of roads, but they're just in a nasty area to get into, you know, areas that guys just don't want to put the effort to get into. So that's kind of one thing I really like to look at on elk is going to be areas where I can escape pressure, or, you know, they say they can escape pressure, but also areas that are going to be overlooked by other hunters too. Those can be actually really, really good gold mines. So that's kind of one thing I really like to look at. The other thing that we really need to consider is that all elk's needs are virtually the same. They need food, cover, and water. You know, we all know that. A lot of times those late season bulls are recouping from the rut. They're going to look for an area where they can kind of have all three of those in very close reciprocity, so they can just, you know, literally blow into a big pile of downfall timber, and they have food close to them, they have water close to them, and they can stay right there. Biologist friend of mine I actually talked to, they were doing a collared study on bulls up in western Montana there, and they had one bull that actually stayed within a 300 yard radius the entire winter. You know, he just had everything he needed, so he just kind of buried himself in there, and that's where he stayed. Now you start looking at an area where you're covering several miles and, you know, glassing into several basins, that 300 yard circle now gets pretty small, you know, as far as locating an elk's going to be. So really main thing I'm going to be looking for is an area that has everything that a bull is going to need, an area that's going to provide security from hunters. So an area where I can escape any type of pressure, you know, and get into those locations. Another thing that I really like to look for in a late season location is going to be areas where I can glass pretty well. You know, growing up in northern Idaho is pretty rare that we ever had glassing opportunities. A lot of our elk hunting was just pounding timber and still hunting. Hunting in western Montana there in my later part of my life there, and then also now moving down to kind of the southwestern portion of the U.S., I get to hunt a lot more glassable type country. Definitely save, obviously, a lot of walking on your legs. You can also save just a lot of time. You know, I look for areas where I can get up on a glassing point. I might be able to look, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles, and you just sit on the spotting scope and binos and just cover ground that way. You know, upon initially locating an area where elk may be, they're generally not too hard to locate, you know, if you're looking into kind of the correct spots in their feeding areas and that type of thing. It's just finding the core areas where you may be looking for them at.
That's kind of been my thing too. Like, now if I put in for late season elk, I'm putting in for units that I know that I can glass.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know, I mean, yeah, you could be very effective still hunting, and if you got a lot of time in that unit and you know how the elk use it, still hunting and walking around can be very effective, but I usually don't have that time. I usually don't have that luxury, especially if I'm going to hunt out of state. So I typically look, first thing I do is get on, look at satellite and see what kind of vegetation, if there's open enough timber and stuff like that. Or, you know, here in Arizona when I put in for late season elk, which isn't very often, but
I only put in for those units that I know that I can glass and hunt them like deer, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big thing. Those late season bulls, I mean, they're smart, particularly if you're targeting mature, older age class type bulls. A lot of times they don't stay out very long. You know, they're moving pretty quickly, you know, and being able to be on the glass and cover, you know, 3, 4, or 5 hillsides instead of just the one that you're walking by, could be incredibly advantageous, and it can cut a lot of days off just kind of your initial, you know, scout, so to speak.
Right. Let me ask you this. Do you do any like tree stand hunting in the late season for, or stand hunting, blind hunting, stuff like that? When you hunt late season bulls?
I'm probably like one of the most impatient people you'll ever meet. I can't do tree stands or blinds or anything. Like, it just drives me nuts. I have to be able to have the ability to move, so to speak. So kind of like big thing I like to key in on, it'd be like major ridge lines where, you know, I can maybe sit in a spot for an hour or two in glass and then, you know, move a couple hundred yards and get a different perspective in glass from that location. I like the ability to be able to adapt to the situation. So if I'm seeing elk in an area that I may want to go in after them, I don't have to rely on them, crossing past me. I have noticed at times, though, some of those late season bulls can be somewhat predictable, but generally, you know, you're going to be in areas where they 100% never have any hunting pressure whatsoever. So relying on, you know, ambush points, so to speak, could be very effective. Yeah, we have some spots up there in northern Idaho, again, heavily timbered, but areas where the elk cross regularly, and me and my dad have both had good success just sitting in those locations. Particularly during periods of pressure where elk might be moving, having really good luck with that. Again, obviously, a lot of that's going to come with just kind of familiarity with your area. I've never had too much luck as far as like on an out-of-state or a new area hunting situation, just kind of rolling in and just knowing those points, you know, immediately.
Right. So, good that you brought up a new area. So, what's your starting point? Like, I'm going to throw a dart at the map and say, hey, go hunt elk here.
Yeah.
What are you doing to figure out where you're going to start and where you're going to end up?
Yeah. So the big thing, like we already kind of talked about, first thing I'm going to do is hit maps. You know, elk at that time of the year, particularly mature bulls, they have very specific needs that they need to fulfill. So a lot of times I'm going to be looking for areas where I might have some good feed. This is generally, in my experience, is going to come more in the effect of like a little bit clear cuts or burns, more so than kind of like the typical open meadows that you'd expect to find elk in. But there again, I mean, it could be the most unsuspecting spot as well. I'm going to look for areas where we have like heavy timber, close reciprocity to the water, you know, kind of all the things that elk are really going to key in on. Also going to start looking at areas on the map, establishing where there may be roads or trails or closed logging roads, that type of thing, and really trying to hone in on areas where hunters are going to have a difficult time accessing or may just simply overlook. I'd say some of my better hunting spots are spots where we're literally just kind of pulling out on a wide spot in the road and climbing straight up and over a face. You know, a lot of times you get in areas where you have a trailhead or a gated road or something like that. Obviously, you're going to have a larger concentration of hunters. So for me, the main thing I'm going to be looking at will be maps, you know, and trying to establish, you know, quote unquote, elky looking areas. And then also establishing areas where I may or may not be running into hunters. Another thing I like to look at, kind of depending on the terrain you're in, or the location you're in, or the season you're in, is going to be potential for snow and snow locations. You know, generally speaking, your cow herds and your smaller immature bulls and spikes, they're going to move down fairly quickly once they start getting snow on them, and they'll move into their wintering grounds. But I've seen large bulls, you know, pushing snow with their bellies. As long as they have everything right there and they're not getting pressure, they could hang out there all year long. You know, they could really care less at that point. So one thing I like to do is kind of get an idea on where snow levels may be, just by studying snow tell sites and maps. And then from that point, I'll kind of just start hunting varying elevation bands. So I might start, you know, a few hundred feet or more above snow line and begin kind of hunting there and taking note of kind of sign I'm seeing, or if I'm seeing elk, and sticking close to those elevation bands. That's kind of another good point as far as glassing is concerned. If you do have good snow, it's actually really easy to spot elk tracks.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you can tell whether you have a whole herd of elk that have moved through the area, or you have a couple solitary elk that are moving. Generally, the solitary elk are going to be the bulls that we're after. You know, so once I kind of get an idea of, you know, here's the type of terrain maybe I'm seeing some tracks in, here's the elevation I'm seeing some tracks in, then I can start crossing spots off my map and really honing in on areas that I feel this area should hold elk.
Right. Well, speaking of tracks, do you ever do any, like, actual tracking?
I would say, like, probably less now to an extent of the open country that I hunt. In northern Idaho, there we did have all that extra, you know, timber and lack of glassing opportunity. One of our best tactics when we had big snowstorms move in is we'd literally get up early and cruise logging roads until we found elk tracks and then literally just get on them and coyote the herd all day long. And that actually used to work really, really well. You know, I do pay attention, obviously, as I'm hiking over ridgelines and that type of thing for just kind of a collection of sign if I am seeing fresh bull tracks, that type of thing. Now, given certain circumstances, if I've got fresh snow and I cut a set of tracks that I know is hot and it seems like it's a bull track or, you know, a larger track, I've certainly followed them, especially when you have a little bit more open country. It can be a little bit easier where you can just kind of peek over a ridge, glass for a half hour, then continue on your, you know, on your trek.
Right, right. Yeah, actually, I talked to a guy not too long ago, and that's all he does is track. He tracks deer that way, and he tracks elk that way. He just waits till snowfall, and then he goes out. And he,
right.
You know, rifle hunter, obviously. But that's pretty cool. I've always been intrigued by that. It's a very mountain manny type way to do it.
Yeah, it's a fun hunt, just especially, like I said, up there in northern Idaho are so thick. I mean, you shot opportunities are generally under 50 yards. You know, and following the tracks, and pretty quick they kind of start weaving back and forth, and you can tell they're getting pretty close to a bed. I mean, there's a lot of suspense right there and excitement just in doing that, as opposed to just kind of blindly, you know, wandering. It's a real fun way to hunt elk. I really enjoy that.
So I know we kind of covered some of these things, but this was a question I had from the Ask the Pros sections. In a descending scale or hierarchy of things, give me a list of 6 features that you're looking for when choosing a hunting spot for late.
Yeah, so kind of the first thing I'm going to be looking at is just going to be an area where the elk are going to be feeling safe and remote. So in other words, they're not going to have any hunting pressure. So I really like to key in on like ugly spots, you know, kind of like the old saying goes, you're going to find elk where you find elk. I've been a victim, I'm sure many people have, trying to find these, you know, these big, beautiful basins, you know, that you see something like on a hunting video and you just think that's where I should be killing an elk. And you get in there and there's absolutely no sign whatsoever. So I like to, you know, try to take the looks of what I'm looking at to an extent out of the equation and more so just look at areas where, okay, there's not going to be any pressure in this location. I know there's not going to be pressure. Once I can establish those areas where there's not going to be pressure, then I kind of further start breaking them down from that point. Looking at those areas, I like to look at like ease of access to hunters. You know, I mean, we've hunted areas that are, you know, 6 to 10 miles off the road, where you know you're not going to have any foot traffic, but there's trails, you know, larger trails in a pretty close area to that, and you'll have guys on horseback. And yes, you got to watch a lot of that. There's a lot of different ways people can access the backcountry. You run into a lot of times with those horse trails, you know, they may or may not be established Forest Service trails. They could just be a trail that an outfitter cut into an area, you know, so you got to stay flexible on that approach too. So oftentimes you can spot those on Google Earth. Obviously, that can be tough. But I mainly like to look at areas that are just mostly void of any type of human interaction or activity. Obviously that can be pretty hard to find in most of the Western areas. But you look hard enough and, you know, a guy can find those. Along with that, I'm also looking for kind of the 3 things that every elk needs. It's just food, water, and shelter. So if I can establish an area that I feel is remote, you know, there's no easy access for guys on horses or guys on foot or what have you, and it's also got kind of the 3 main priorities that elk are looking for, that's certainly going to be an area I'm going to check out and at least cross off the map. For those, I really like to, if I can, stay as far away from the area and look at it from a distance through optics. With the optics, you obviously you got a lot better view than just simply what you can see in front of you cruising through an area. But it also allows you to look at the elk without intruding them. You're not spreading your scent anywhere. You're not spreading your sound or potentially spooking elk. A lot of those late season bulls, like I said, they're not going to tolerate any type of human interaction. So if they get bumped once, they may move 10 miles, which they can do that in a few hours, you know, and they're completely out of your reach at that point. Along with the glassing options, though, one thing I really like to look for in an area is going to be my movement options. So, I mean, pretty often it's easy to get into a great big nasty canyon that I can glass, but if I'm glassing 2-3 miles across that thing and I have to drop 3,000 feet down to the bottom and then climb up the other side, it's not a very viable option for me to hunt. So I like to look for areas that not only can I glass long distance, but I can also reach these areas that I'm glassing. So for me, a big thing I like to look at is large, long running ridge lines. You know, whether I have a bunch of finger ridges that run off of this, that's main connecting ridge, but just something where I can move through the country if need be and close the distance on bulls. And then kind of the last thing, and this is, I left this for the last one because it's kind of a moot point at points, but a lot of it's just going to depend on where you're hunting too. And that's going to be, like I already hit on, the elevation band of where I'm going to be hunting. Certain areas, like in western Montana where I hunted there, we didn't get these big, like, winter migrations that you see in a lot of these other states. There, I mean, elk would just simply move to a lower elevation. Whereas you get in some of these other western states where you have actually like big transitional areas where elk are going to be moving through this country, moving into their winter ranges, a lot of those times, those transition areas, if you can find a good glassing point and just sit all day long and look over a ton of country, you can catch elk moving often. Whereas like some of these other areas here up, you know, western Montana or what have you, elk may just drop 400-500 feet down the mountain and hole up again. You know, so you don't have a lot of movement other than just their feeding and feeding to moving, or excuse me, feeding to bedding movements. You just don't have much going on there. So I really like I said, to pay attention to elevation. A lot of that's largely going to be based on available snow levels. Oftentimes, if we're hunting a little bit earlier and there is no snow, or it's just a late winter that year, I'm pretty much going as high as I can get starting from that point.
Cool. Yeah, we don't have, in Arizona, we have like very, very, very little migration. There's a couple areas, couple units that have like really tall mountains where they might come off, you know, come off the top and drop down below, you know. But all our mountains here are like sky islands anyway. They just,
yeah.
Even the ones up north, you know, fairly flat around the mountain, and then there's this, you know, 13,000 foot mountain that stays out of nothing. So yeah, and they'll, you know, elk will come down to 8,000 or 9,000 feet, you know, instead of being way the hell up high when the snow starts kicking in pretty hard,
right?
Which is not really often, but at that elevation, yeah, we'll get quite a bit. So this next question, it's kind of a vague and general question, so I'm gonna ask the question, and then I'm gonna kind of give you a little bit of my answer to kind of steer you where
yeah. I'm with it.
It's, how do you like to hunt elk in late season? And for me, I most often, if I'm putting in for a late season tag here in Arizona, I'm putting in for an archery hunt. And I'm doing it with a friend that knows how to use a radio. And I often will, like I said, I'll pick areas that we can glass, and we'll hunt them just like we hunt deer here in Arizona, which is putting an earbud in the ear, having a guy behind the glass on 15s on a tripod, and talking you in for a spot and stalk.
Right.
That's my general answer. So I'm just prepping you for where I was, what the question really means, basically.
Yeah.
At least the way I interpreted it.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, like, kind of like you hit on there, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on, like, not only where you're hunting, you know, because, like, you get in a situation like you're talking about there in Arizona, you know, oftentimes you can see long distance, but then you kind of get down into the crud, so to speak, where the elk are, and you could totally lose them. We did a late archery hunt down there last year for deer, I mean, it was incredible. We'd glass stuff and you think you're good, and then you drop down into a canyon and it's head high brush and you can't see nothing. You know, so in that opportunity, having a spotter with you is going to be incredibly advantageous. But also, I would say, like, when I'm, like, considering a late elk hunt, the main thing I'm going to play into is going to be, like, my strengths. You know, I don't want to go in an area necessarily where I'm going to be totally uncomfortable as far as having to change my hunting tactics. You know, I've definitely kind of more, I'd say, like, in the last several years, just tried to transition my hunting into stuff that I'm more familiar with. So, like, areas where I may have, like, really good knowledge in, I strongly believe that familiarity with an area is going to bring more success than, you know, like, hopping. But there again, more familiarity just with my typical style of hunting. I found if I can just stick with something that works for me and just keep doing it, I can generally find success through that. You know, whether that's the most effective way for everybody to do it or the most effective way in general to do it, you know, it's obviously up for some questioning. I'd say I probably fill more tags at the end of the hunt than I do at the beginning of the hunt, but, it's kind of the main thing for me as far as like late season elk goes. I really like to hunt with like another guy or two. I typically like to honestly try to keep my hunting party or group size fairly small. You know, I've been pretty fortunate where I've got a good hunting partner where we both kind of think along the same lines, you know, without asking each other, we kind of just know what the other guy's going to do. So that, you know, as far as decision making goes, that makes things a heck of a lot easier on us. But with that late season stuff, I like to spend a lot of time glassing and covering a lot of country. And more eyes behind optics, it's just better statistics as far as finding animals. You have more country that you're covering at simultaneous time. So having another guy there to help glass is going to be huge. Some of those areas that we hunt, particularly like in burns, you know, it's very viable to have a guy spotting you in. Whether, you know, radio is legal where you're at or just through the use of hand signals, that can be very beneficial. And then not to mention after that point, if you are successful, just simply breaking down an elk and getting it out of the country, having more bodies is always much better with elk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the worst thing ever, is getting an elk down. It goes from pure adrenaline and excitement to, oh shit, I got to get this thing out by myself now.
Oh yeah. Couple years ago in Montana, opening weekend, I was going up to a spot that I had killed a pretty nice mule deer the year before, and it's a real kind of nasty knife ridge. It climbs for about 2,500 feet off a valley floor, and I was going up, and right at first light, I ended up just running into a small bachelor group of bulls I was lucky enough to shoot a bull out of, and it was a big open face, super steep. There's nothing to tie the elk off on, and by myself, from the point of where the bull died, and through the process of me taking photos and breaking them down, I think I was about 40 yards downhill at that point. He just kept moving, and there's just kind of nothing you could do. You know, and that bull, I ended up packing out by myself, and I just kind of shuttled quarters down the mountain, you know, and then just trying to figure out the logistics of how to do everything when you're by yourself, and not to mention handling quarters as you're pulling them off and everything. It can be a big chore. You know, they're a heck of a lot bigger than a deer, and elk tend to like to die in real cruddy spots.
For sure.
But yeah, so I mean, like I said, I really like to look for areas where I can glass. That's going to be the number one thing that's going to save a bunch of walking and wear and tear on my body. It's also going to give me the ability to just look into a bunch of different basins without having to spend, you know, one full day to climb into that basin. You know, I get a really good glimpse into some of the areas that I'm looking at. And again, kind of like I've hit on, you know, most of these, I really like to look for areas where I feel like I can distance myself from people. You know, and one thing I found there, like I said, is just looking for kind of the non-traditional routes into an area. You know, if I could park on the side of the road and climb 1,200 feet up and over a ridge, whereas another guy might have to walk 9 miles on a logging road or what have you to get in there, you know, it's generally going to be a place nobody's going to go. You know, so kind of for looking in these areas, our motto has always been, as far as like looking at a map or something, if I look at it and I think to myself, yeah, it's going to suck, it's probably an area that's going to hold elk.
That's good to think about it.
Yeah, so that's always been, you know, a big thing for us is just let's locate the areas that nobody else wants to go and go there and start looking around. You know, once you kind of, especially in a particular area, one thing I like to keep note of, if I move into one of my spots, let's say I'm hunting a totally new unit, new state, and I've picked out, you know, six or seven areas that I feel strongly these could hold elk. and I go into a spot and I start finding either bull tracks or physically seeing bulls, you know, I'm seeing some sign and whatnot, I'll take a note of like, okay, here's kind of the elevation I'm at right now. Here's some of the aspects I'm seeing around this elk in terms of vegetation, kind of the ground makeup, that type of thing. Then I'll start applying all those things I've learned now to the remaining six or seven spots that I have and say, okay, which one of these areas also have these? You know, and those might be areas. So what ended up being my ABC spot may totally change, you know, after I find an elk. Might be a situation where I'm like, okay, I got to switch things up a little bit. These elk are in different locations than what I was originally thinking they're going to be.
Yeah, for sure. Now for me, and you touched on this a little bit, like, I always think about the weather, and I always think it about... So here's it, for instance, 2011, I had a late season archery tag here, and I had all these cameras out, I did a bunch of stuff that I don't normally do. I actually had some tree stands set up and on water holes and some mineral licks out, and you know, I really wanted to maximize, because I accidentally put in for that hunt.
Right.
I transposed a number and I got a late season tag, and I was going for an early season tag.
Perfect.
I'm not going to squander this tag because I burnt a bunch of points on it. And 4 or 5 days before my hunt started, they got hit with a crazy storm, and it was mass exodus. It was one of those units that they're all up the top of the mountain, and when it snows really bad, they drop off the mountain. So, you know, the first, I couldn't even get into the spot. I couldn't even access the spots where I had to go back in the spring to get my stands and whatnot.
Oh, wow.
That's how bad it was. The one or two spots that I could get to that were lower, I can literally see trails coming off the mountain and things dropping down. So I just kind of switched up, and I'm like, all right, what can I access in this area that's lower? What can I glass? And I just moved. And then the other thing was, it was windy and like lots of snow. So I started thinking about it. I'm like, all right, if I'm going to be glassing, you know, and I do this for deer, so why wouldn't it work for elk? You know, glass into the wind, looking in those wind breaks. Elk are going to seek out, you know, shelter from the weather, just like deer will do, right? Any other animal. And I think it's just being mindful of those things too, not just looking for good country. Like you said earlier, it might look beautiful, it might look like the perfect place where elk will be, but think about the whole hunt as holistically as possible, and what's all the contributing factors. You know, have you had precipitation? So is water good? Now that there's snow on the ground, are they going to be up high? Are they going to be up low? If it's really windy. So like, I had nothing but crazy, I mean, talking like 20 mile an hour winds.
Oof.
For 7 days, and it was freezing cold and it was snowy and just shit. But as soon as I realized where I needed to start looking, where are elk going to go to make themselves the most comfortable, that's when my hunt went from, we didn't see elk for the first 2 days, to I had 3 or 4 stalks a day until I finally shot a bull, 7 days in.
Yeah.
Thinking about stuff like that, and I think is important.
Yeah, that's such a perfect example too. So like I said earlier, I really like to like play into my strengths as a hunter. So like, I know like what things I do better than say like other tactics where I may not have the knowledge for them or experience for them or what have you. There's also a lot to be said for just staying flexible in your approach. You know, like you say, what you're normally doing just wasn't producing elk. So you started looking at, okay, you know, where are the windbreaks going to be? You know, animals aren't a whole lot different than humans. I mean, to that degree, I mean, like we were talking about with our archery hunts you and I just finished up, you know, I mean, elk do live out in the weather year round. Obviously they can't go inside and dry off when it's raining, but at the same point, if it's an absolute downpour, they don't want to be out in that, you know, they're going to hole up and wait till it's gone, you know? So kind of changing your approach on things and, you know, can really lead to success. You know, it's one thing I always think about, You know, if I'm 3-4 days into a hunt and nothing's working, you know, okay, as far as my strategy or my approach to this hunt that I'm doing, what do I need to change? Because obviously what I'm doing right now is not working.
Right.
You know, and I think too many guys do get stuck into, you know, whether it's lack of preparation or just whatever, you know, they'll look at an area and go, okay, this glassing point is really, really good. I'm going to go hunt there. The first day they go up and say they spot a bull.
Right.
And then they sit on that same glassing point for the next 5 days and never see another elk.
Yep.
You know, just because it, you know, it's worked in the past, or even if it's worked in that same area before, things change. I mean, I think just a clear example of that, you know, kind of more going into the archery season side of things, but you know, you have an area that you hunt year after year after year, you know, and just the location of where elk are rubbing their antlers for the rut can change every year. You know, there's some time that something is changing in that area that'll change how the elk use it and how they move through it. You know, and especially when you got, you know, a more nomadic type animal like that, you know, if they get in an area and it's just not fitting their needs, they'll move, you know, and we as hunters, when we're targeting elk like that, need to be able to stay flexible and move with them.
Exactly. Exactly. People all the time. What's that saying? It's like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yep. 100%. I say that constantly. That's like one thing, like, and I always got to like slow myself down and like, I'm like, hey, dumbass, like what you're doing is not working right now. Yep. You know, you've been doing the same thing for the last 3 weekends. You're having the same results. You're getting frustrated. What do you got to change? You know, a lot of times that I found too, like just rolling the dice and going, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to get dried out. I'm going to look at a map and I'm just going to pick a totally different area than what I'm hunting. And I'm just going to go there. And oftentimes just getting kind of fresh perspective and just moving into like new locations or just changing your approach and how you're going to hunt something, could be everything you need. You know, it could just be such a simple little thing that you're overlooking every time you go out and suddenly changing your process. You're like, oh, you know, duh, that's where the elk are.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I have an example of that. So my guys were having a hunt. We were hunting an elk or hunting a tag for, I don't want to say a client because he's a family, basically family member. He's my wife's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's hunting, honestly, the worst unit in Arizona. The elk herd used to be an excellent unit. Matter of fact, it's where I shot my bull in 2011. But they've decimated the herd in there because of environmentalists are trying to save the aspen trees, so they wanted to kill an elk herd. Go figure.
Right.
But so it's a super tough hunt. Super tough. And I, you know, he was doing the same thing. He was trying to, you know, play the calling and bugling game and da-da-da-da-da, and it really wasn't happening. And I, you know, I changed him up. I'm like, listen, you need to go here. You need to go sit in this, go sit on water. You guys haven't had real rains. There's no other water around this, and elk are hitting it, and so on and so forth. Different, completely different terrain, lower elevation, and it's close to another unit, which is excellent. It's like literally across the street, so you might have some bleed over from the other side of the road here.
Right.
I went and sat there one day and killed a bull. So, but, I mean, part of that's luck, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, realizing that what you're doing is not right and having to move, having to, you know, adjust and put yourself in a position to do something different.
You know, yeah.
To produce a different outcome.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it can make all the difference in the world sometimes.
I asked you before we got on to think about a couple of stories.
Yeah.
So, if you could share with us a late season.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, honestly, like, the best story that I have that kind of, like, illustrates everything that we've talked about and staying flexible and all that, was a hunt from last year, and I didn't even have a tag. I was just along to be another set of eyes and a back. So we had it was an elk hunt in Wyoming last year. I did with another guy from the office here, and we originally backpacked into a spot that they were in during archery season and had just a mess of bulls in there. And we packed in there, and I mean, it was beautiful country in western Wyoming. I mean, some of the most incredible stuff I've ever been in, and very, very glassable. Had kind of everything you wanted. Had high alpine basins. It had real steep, thick timber patches. Lots of water. Lots of feed. I mean, it had everything. You know, on paper, there should have been elk in there like crazy. And we did find quite a few elk, but a lot of it was just cow groups, spikes, you know, stuff that we weren't interested in particularly harvesting. And then also in there was an old horse trail. It wasn't on any maps or nothing, but it was like an outfitter trail. And there was an outfitter in there. Of course. And they had hunted it. You know, it wasn't something they hunted regularly, but it was just part of their rotation. So there was that presence of them there. You know, no matter what we did, you just couldn't escape areas where horses had been. So, you know, after spending a couple of days in there, it was pretty clear, just based on what we could see in glass, it was pretty clear that there were not likely any mature bulls hanging out in there. We figured our time could be better spent elsewhere. So we packed out and went into a new spot. And this spot was off of a gated road, but the gated road only kind of took you to the area that we wanted to take off from. And then we had a lot of option of movement from there as far as kind of getting deeper into the backcountry, so to speak. And our first night there, we actually spotted a small raghorn way up high on this opposite hillside. Nothing we can make a plan from that point, but it gave us an idea of, okay, there could be some elk in this location. So we slept at the truck that night, and the next day we loaded up our packs with several days of food and, you know, all of our gear, and we took off. And we ended up, that first night, we actually found a pretty nice 6-point. I mean, we never got a real good look at him. We were actually glassing back into north-facing timber where the elk were bedded, and we were able to get high enough above the timber that we kind of like look down through the timber, so to speak, and we were able to actually spot a pretty nice bull. But there was also a handful of guys hunting this area, and because of that, the elk were really, really holding tight. I mean, it was almost to the point where it was impossible to try to get shots on them. Really tough. You know, we did try to make a move on that bull that night, and it pretty much ended up with us 2,000 feet below where we started and dark, and we ended up kicking out deer beds and just throwing our sleeping bags in those for the night. It was a long night. We spent the next couple of days moving through that country and really getting into areas that we felt were very remote. But again, we were kind of nagged by horse trails. You know, whether there was hunters specifically hunting that area or not, they were definitely moving through those areas. You know, and it was definitely, you're still seeing a lot of cows and spikes, but the big bulls were just not there. You know, we're having a lot of issues with them. So I want to say we hunted, it was probably 5 or 6 days in. We decided to go back into town, grabbed a beer and a burger, and just kind of reevaluated what we were doing. You know, we were really hunting these backcountry spots and just trying to get away from everything, but we were just having trouble. There's just so many horse trails in this area. We just could not get away from human presence. So we ended up finally locating a spot on a map. You literally can only get maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles from the road at most, but you had to cross a creek to get into it. And it was just kind of a string of ridges that you can go up and had little pockets of areas you can glass into. And we decided, hey, this could be a spot to go try. Let's just go do it. We've been humping all over the hills several thousand feet a day, and we're just beat, and we just want a spot. It's just kind of easy. Let's just go check it out. So we end up leaving the truck at 5 that afternoon, bailed across the creek, hiked maybe 500-600 yards kind of up into this area, and ran into a herd of, I don't know, there's probably 4 or 5 cows, and there was a bull that we wanted to shoot, and they're all out there about 400 yards. And got set up, guy made a great shot on the bull, broke it down, and we were back to the truck at 9 o'clock with everything. So in a total of 4 hours that we left the truck, we were back ready to go home. You know, it's just kind of just one of those examples of like, you know, these areas looked pristine, and I mean, they were just incredible for elk, you know, but no matter how much we willed it, the bulls just weren't there. You know, they just didn't want to be there. There was too much pressure. There was just, you know, something that was just keeping them from those locations. You know, so we spent a few days kind of more or less doing nature hikes.
Right.
And then, you know, we finally went back, kind of recentered, regathered, and said, okay, let's, you know, this isn't working. Let's try something polar opposite. And it, you know, it ended up being very successful for us.
That's awesome. It's always good when things just, yeah, like when you take a chance on something and it works out, like that's like,
I don't oh, know. Yeah.
And for me, it's always that much better. Like, I don't know.
You can't beat like a natural confidence booster more than just rolling into an area and finding success on it like that.
Right.
But I think a lot of that just lends itself to just being able to realize when things aren't working, and swallowing your pride if it is that type of situation and going, okay, I don't know as much as I thought I did about this area, or about this species. What do I got to change to make things work? And it's so easy anymore to it that, this day and age of social media to get discouraged. I mean, like I said, we humped around in Idaho there for the last 9 days, just struggling to finally get a shot opportunity on a bull and get back home and hop on Instagram or Facebook and my buddies are slamming big bulls all over the place.
Exactly.
It kills you. It's so frustrating. I think I threaten to delete social media every year come fall. just being willing to stay flexible, in your approach, but also at the same point, like not spinning your wheels in the mud, so to speak, by going into areas where you just, you're very likely not going to find elk. If you got a gated road that every local drives up to on Saturday morning, you may find a bull that moves through the area, but your likelihood of finding a mature bull at that, that's living in the area or is going to give you a good opportunity to harvest him, it's going to be pretty slim to none.
Yeah, you could get lucky, but, it's not something you're going to have consistent success for sure.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us and great story. I look forward to maybe having you on again. We'll talk about maybe doing some early season hunts for next year.
I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, sure. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Honestly, the best route, I don't do too much on Facebook anymore. Best route's just through Instagram. My handle on there, it's just Dave, T is in Tango, Dave T Barnett, all one word. And then also beyond there on GoHunt.com, I have all my articles on there. You can just search my authors, Dave Barnett on GoHunt, where they regularly post a few of my articles there too. Doing a lot of work on there. If anybody also had any specific questions, you can email me at dave@gohunt.com.
Sweet. Well, thanks again for coming on, and hopefully the rest of your season goes well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Heck yeah. Thanks, buddy.
All right, bud. Thanks.
Hey, guys, if you're looking for a really good hunt, every year my outfitting service, Days in the Wild, we take out a handful of clients for deer and javelina in the archery season and rifle seasons here. It's too late to get a rifle tag now for deer, but the draw is opening for javelina. And if you want to get a rifle tag for javelina, or you'd like to come out and do a combination archery javelina hunt, archery deer and javelina hunt, give me a shout. Hit me up on Instagram or Facebook or hit me up on the blog or go to our website, daysinthewild.com, and contact us through there. We can talk about it and build you your hunt of your, I don't know, I want to say of your dreams, but definitely an awesome time and lots of action and really true Western experience where you're getting to do a lot of spot and stalk, getting to navigate the mountains. It's a good time. Great weather that time of year. Most of our hunts take place in December and January for the deer and javelina combination. And if you're coming just for javelina, those are typically in February. So give us a shout and we'll put together a great hunt for you. Thanks.